This is Nahumi, Sefer Melachim Bet, Chapter 9. Elisha sends one of his students on a secret mission to anoint Yehu ben Nimshi as the new king of Israel. The student arrives at the garrison in remote Gilad, where Yehu is serving as leader of the Jewish army in their war against Aram. He takes Yehu into a private room, anoints him, and informs him that Hashem has tasked him with the responsibility of killing King Yehoram and wiping out the entire royal line of Ahab. The student leaves hastily, and the troops ask Yehu what transpired behind closed doors. At first, he hides the truth. Eventually, he reveals the content of his exchange with the young prophet. Apparently already dissatisfied with the current regime of Yehoram, the assembled men are happy to symbolically coronate Yehu as their new king by placing their garments under his feet and blowing a shofar. Yehu gathers an entourage and heads to Yisrael to confront Yehoram as he was commanded. As mentioned in the previous chapter, Yehoram was recovering from wounds he sustained on the battlefield and had been joined by Ahaziah, king of Yehuda, who had come to visit him. King Yehoram's watchman spots the approaching group of horsemen and informs the king. Twice, sentries are dispatched to clarify whether Yehu comes in peace. Each time, he gruffly orders them to fall in step behind him. At this point, the watchman recognizes that the leader of the company of men is Yehu, who can be identified by his wild and reckless style of driving. The two kings have their horses saddled and go out to intercept Yehu. Rejecting their salutations and offers of peace, he condemns the wickedness of Izebel that has corrupted Israel and kills them both kings, in the vineyard of Navot. Yehu notes that his act is in fulfillment of the prophecy of Eliyahu, that the blood of Navot would be visited upon the house of Ahab. Yehu proceeds to the palace, where he finds Izebel, who has done her hair and makeup, and is not surprised by his arrival. She insults Yehu, comparing him to Zimri, who murdered his master Elah. Yehu commands the guards attending to Izebel to cast her out of the window onto the ground below, and they speedily comply with his instructions. She dies on impact and is then trampled by a horse. Yehu sits with the men and has a meal. He then orders them to give Izebel a proper burial, since she was of royal lineage. However, dogs have already consumed most of her corpse, leaving only her skull, hands, and feet to be interred. Yehu again notes that this is a fulfillment of the prophecy of Eliyahu, who predicted that Izebel's body would fall like dung in the portion of Navot, in Yisrael, and that dogs would eat her flesh and she would be unrecognizable as a result. One question that we can raise here is why Elisha does not anoint Yehu directly, instead appointing a student to carry out the task. It cannot be simply because the selection of Yehu was communicated by God to Eliyahu and not to Elisha directly. After all, Elisha personally anointed Hazael, the king of Aram, even though this too was a commandment that was received by his master Eliyahu. What prevented him from approaching Yehu himself for the same purpose? Elisha's behavior can be explained in at least two possible ways. Perhaps he reasoned that a public figure like himself entering the Israelite garrison in wartime was too unusual and suspicious an act for it to go unnoticed. This would have undermined the element of secrecy and surprise that proved to be critical to Yehu's victory. Alternatively, Elisha may have thought that the theme of his prophetic career, demonstrating Hashem's mercy and compassion rather than his strict justice, was fundamentally incompatible with the bloody and violent mission on which Yehu was being sent, and therefore delegated his appointment to a student. There is no question that the activities of Yehu, while sanctioned by Hashem, have little in common with Elisha's leadership style and conduct. Yehu, if anything, is very much a throwback to the methodology and attitudes of Eliyahu HaNavi. In fact, in this chapter and the one that follows, Yehu explicitly invokes the name and prophecies of Eliyahu as justification or validation of his actions several times. Yehu describes himself as a zealot, again, casting himself in the mold of Eliyahu. And both Yehu and the young prophet who comes to anoint him are called crazy during the narrative, indicating that Yehu had a rare religious charisma and energy about him that distinguished him from his colleagues and almost was reminiscent of the character of a prophet. We will hopefully identify more textual and substantive parallels between Yehu and Eliyahu in future summaries. Yehu's retrogression to the style and approach of Eliyahu seems first of all to suggest that the retired prophet Eliyahu was correct, although his timing may have been a little premature. The house of Ahab and the kingdom of Israel were in need of some punishment to adjust their course. Elisha's kindness and compassion have certainly endeared the prophet to many and have served as a source of tremendous benefit to the people. But they have not addressed the root of the dysfunction in Israel, its entrenchment in idolatrous ideas and practices. Yehu emerges like another incarnation of Eliyahu to once again bring divine justice to bear upon those who have created distance between the Jewish people and Hashem. One wonders how in the midst of rampant idolatry, Yehu happens to be a devoted worshiper of Hashem. Was he feigning religious fervor just to give himself a basis to claim the throne and to displace the house of Ahab? Did he take up the mantle of destroying idol worship just to have a cause to rebel in the name of some kind of meaningful cause? When did this passion for Judaism become so central to Yehu's life? It seems to come out of nowhere. So I'd like to suggest that Yehu was not faking. He was a sincere Jew who really abhorred idolatry and embraced Torah. He was just part of the system. He was employed by the king and he did his job. But deep down, he recognized the corruption of the kingdom spiritually and politically. From the very fact that Hashem specifically designated Yehu to become the next king of Israel, we have to surmise that he was qualified for the position. This means that we must assume that he rejected idol worship and served Hashem alone. Although in the final analysis, he too falls short of the expectations Hashem articulated to him, Yehu started out with a fundamental commitment to Hashem and Torah, and as we will see in the next chapter, he was able to at least partially reverse the self-destructive national trend towards idolatry and paganism.